John Stossel is back on the show today. You know him from ABC's 2020, where he's been working for, I believe, 25 years now. He was on just a few months ago to talk about one of his one-hour network specials, and now he's taken some of the stuff that he has done for that special and for all the work on 2020 and turned it into a book called Myths, Lies, and Downright Stupidity. Get Out the Shovel, Why Everything You Know Is Wrong. John, welcome back to KMOX.
Thank you, Paul.
It's always a pleasure having you on here. The last book, Give Me a Break, was a national bestseller, and I think this one is probably on its way as well.
Actually, you know, I just got word it's number 6 the first week.
Well, congratulations on that.
Thank you.
It's a very nice start. And as I told you last time we talked, it's always nice to see a person who is a libertarian and a skeptic being accepted in America, because quite often you've got to fight to have your voice heard, don't you?
Yes, and I wouldn't use the word accepted. Tolerated? Allowed a place at the table, maybe?
Well, you're number 6 on the New York Times bestseller list, and you've been on network TV for a quarter of a century.
That just means that 3, 4, 5% of the country is interested.
Well, we'll take it.
We'll take it.
Whatever little percentage we can get.
And just to clarify, and the subtitle is Why Everything You Know Is Wrong, the last special was just last Friday, actually, the Lies, Myths, and Stupidity special.
Is that what did we talk about a couple of months ago then? Must have been another
school.
Oh, that's what it was. Right. I apologize. Let's talk about some of the things in here. In particular, I want to talk to you about gas prices and energy and alternative energy in this country, which you write about in various parts of the book and you've reported on, I'm sure. You say that gas prices going up and companies being accused of gouging, that price gouging is a good thing. Explain that.
Well, it's hard to explain that given the word gouging is pretty gross, but gouging is just what the politicians call it. I would call it price signaling, or prices being free to flow so supply and demand can work its magic. In the show Friday, we had one example of, this is aside from gas, but just to wind into it, of a guy who, after Katrina, saw people had no power and drove from Kentucky to Mississippi, bought 20 generators, put them in his truck, and people were excited to see him, and then they locked him up for 4 days, confiscated his generators. They're still confiscated, and the Mississippi Attorney General defends this as he violated the gouging laws. This is immoral. But the point is that price increases are what get people to move supplies in. And the same is true for oil. When the price goes up, it sends wonderful signals. One, that we should drive less or maybe buy a smaller car. And two, that greedy oil companies should drill for more oil. And that's then what solves the shortages. The price gouging laws are like the price controls of President Nixon or the former Soviet Union, and they make everybody miserable. They just create shortages.
Yeah, I'm not in favor of price controls either, and I agree with you that they do cause more problems than they solve. But I see a difference between that and somebody trying to take advantage of an emergency situation. And the generator story, I would agree with you on, but how about the story last year after one of, or 2 years ago, actually, after one of the hurricanes that Florida had? They had, what, 4 in a year, and some towns were absolutely devastated. And one local motel owner who normally would rent his rooms for $29, $39, $49 a night was suddenly charging people who had lost their homes $149 a night. What do you think about that?
Well, the morality is iffy, but if he doesn't do this, then somebody who needs a place to stay might get 2 rooms. By doing this, then he makes as much as he can, and maybe he'll turn over the trailer that he bought to use for his family as an extra room. Or maybe somebody else will come in when they hear how much rooms are selling for in this town and offer some temporary lodging, and the people who need it most will get it. I would say it's good for the public. And in my Myths, Lies, Stupidity special Friday, we had 3 Nobel Prize winners on it saying the price gougers are heroes.
Okay, we're going to have to disagree on that one, particularly in those emergency situations, but I agree with you. You know, if gas prices do go up, well, we see it when here in the Midwest, we didn't hit $3 this year, but we did last year after Katrina, and a lot of the rest of the country is still at the $3 point. And we have heard all this talk about conservation and alternative energy. I think part of the problem there is that we kind of get used to it. I would have thought that $2.50 would have been a point where people would really get serious about that. I'm not sure that $3 is, if those aren't. Do you have a sense of any kind of outrage that really is causing people to change their habits?
Well, the press is certainly outraged, and some people are screaming, but I think that's the point of why supply and demand is best, because none of us knows at what point people will change their behavior, and that's why it's best to let the prices flow and let each individual decide. Some will want to pay the big bucks for the hotel room, others will want to pile up with a friend, and letting the price go to the equilibrium of supply and demand is the best way to do that.
Should we worry about those economically who can't afford to make those decisions and are instead of having them made for them?
Oh, there were two parts in that question. We should worry about the people who can't afford to make those decisions, and we should use private charity to help them. But it is patronizing to say that we're going to protect them by limiting the prices by not allowing prices to rise, because the result is that people go in and they get three hotel rooms, and people stock up, and supplies disappear even more quickly.
What do you think about alternative energies and renewable energies and having the government offering tax breaks and incentives to push that along?
If these are good ideas, the government doesn't need to offer incentives and tax breaks, most of which turn into boondoggles for lawyers and politicians. If these are good ideas, greedy entrepreneurs who, without gouging laws, could make a good buck on them, will just develop them. And every time government has tried to plan it, from sin fuels in America to Japanese industrial planning from the Ministry of Trade, they failed. In Japan, they told Honda not to go into the motorcycle business. No, I'm sorry, to stay in the motorcycle business, not to go into cars.
But doesn't the government offer subsidies to the oil companies?
No, they shouldn't. Shouldn't offer subsidies to anybody.
No subsidies of any kind, even farmers.
Especially farmers. What a scam the farm subsidy program is. Most people don't know that most people think without these subsidies, the farms would go away. We wouldn't have a steady supply of food. But the opposite is true. Most crops, peaches, peas, green beans, plums, have no subsidies at all. And those farmers thrive. Those prices are as low as any other. These subsidies just become a economy-distorting boondoggle.
Talking with John Stossel from ABC's 2020 here on the Paul Harris Show. His new book is called Myths, Lies, and Downright Stupidity, Get Out the Shovel, Why Everything You Know is Wrong. John, one of the things that I rail against on my show on a regular basis is the nanny government concept, the concept that says politicians know how to raise your children better than you do. And to me, one of the most recent examples and worst examples of that is the Take Soda Out of the Schools campaign. What do you think of it?
That one doesn't bother me as much as others. Bill Clinton is campaigning for that. It bothers me much more than we have a government monopoly running the schools, if we're going to, and they want to be nannies to the children, then saying don't drink sugar water is the least of the threats.
Really?
Yeah, it's not very good for you. If they're going to spoon feed us the curriculum, why shouldn't they decide what food is to be sold?
Well, I think there's a difference between how we educate our kids and what we feed our kids. I think those are our different decisions. And when children are already getting their diet from their parents at home, if their parents say to them, you know, it's okay for you to take this dollar and go to school and buy yourself a Pepsi, I don't think any school administrator should get in the way of that.
No, that's a good point, but I don't think they should stop them from buying it. But if they choose not to have a Pepsi machine, I don't think that's so terrible.
And what do you mean when you talk about a government monopoly on education and that being bad? Elucidate on that, if you would.
The teachers' unions and the educrats say education is too important to leave it to the competition of the market. But again, it's a myth. The opposite is true. All the best of life is what we get from the market. And the reason we're spending $10,000 per student, $250,000 per classroom, and then squandering it, because think what you could hire three teachers for that, is because it's a government monopoly education system. You're assigned to your school. Imagine we were assigned grocery stores that way. People would soon be moving to the neighborhood with a good grocery store. and the stores would stop trying. The reasons that other countries beat us on these international tests is because those countries, spending far less than we, allow kids a choice. The money's attached to the student, and they can take it to a government school or to a religious school or a secular school, and the competition between the schools makes them all better. In America, no school is ever closed, no matter how bad it is. Everybody's paid the same, the good teacher and the bad teacher, and that's a recipe for mediocrity.
But I would contend that the marketplace actually works there, where there is competition. There are private schools. There are parochial schools. Parents do have a choice if they want to send their kid off to one of those. They don't have to send their kid to a public school.
Only rich parents. Only parents who can afford both to pay taxes to the bloated bureaucracy and then still have $10,000 left over for a private school or $4,000 left over for a Catholic school.
What's the difference between that and the people who can afford that generator and the people who can't afford that generator? Some people with money are going to get things. Some people without money are not going to get things. Isn't that the way the marketplace works?
Yes, I'm thinking about this one. That's interesting. Mind bender for me.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to be for price gouging, then you got to be for some schools being more expensive than others.
But then you can't demand $10,000 per student in taxes from everybody and ask the person to pay for the generator. And that's what we do for schools. We're saying we're going to take care of it. We're going to educate everyone. You give us the money. And then they set up a monopoly that's so bad, the only choice you have is to cough up a lot of money for people, a lot more than the cost of a generator, to pay school tuition. But you're right, there is a similarity, and poor people under a truly raw, no-government education system would have to struggle. But I would argue that charities would chip in, I would chip in, and it would do much better than the government monopoly does now, which fails millions of poor people in inner-city schools.
Yeah, I don't think they would be better served, though, if it were all to go to a system where you pay as you go for schools. And I would also argue that when it comes to the common good, and I believe there is such a thing, people end up paying for parks that they don't necessarily go to. They pay for streets they don't go to. They pay for libraries that they don't go to. And all of those things are good to have as part of our communities, not to mention the fact that having a public school in a community tends to keep real estate prices up.
Well, it depends on the public school. If the public schools like the ones around my house, the real estate values go down. We're talking private versus public, and people like private. People like public, and they don't like private. It sounds exclusionary. But can you go into your kid's school and visit? No. But you can go into a private supermarket and visit any time, and they have an amazing success, 30,000 products, all unbelievably cheap, something the government could never do. In public parks, you have litter strewn around. In a stadium, I can throw litter on the ground. They don't even call it litter because part of your ticket is that someone will come and pick it up. So you pay for it one way or the other, either through taxes or through private payments. But private payments tend to get taken better care of.
John Stossel from ABC's 2020 here on the Paul Harris Show. The book is called Myths, Lies, and Downright Stupidity. Get Out the Shovel, Why Everything You Know Is Wrong. Talking with John Stossel from ABC's 2020. His new bestseller is called Myths, Lies, and Downright Stupidity. Get Out the Shovel, Why Everything You Know Is Wrong. And in the book, he goes after all sorts of subjects, including debunking psychics and homeopathy and that sort of thing. John, I've always wondered why in this country we don't go after some of these scam artists who call themselves psychics. There aren't really laws on the books, or if there are, they're not really enforced, are they?
And thank goodness, we have too many laws on the books. And you're going to have bureaucrats prosecuting psychics who genuinely believe, probably, that they can see these things. Most of them aren't scam artists. Maybe the ones in Myths, Lies were, because they were charging some big bucks. But most are just deluded people. You can't have a law for everything. It's just our job in the media to let people know the trick. And the main trick with the astrologers and the psychics is that you remember the hits and you forget the misses.
Right.
So somebody says, oh, yes, I can read you and I know blah, 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 blah about you.
Mm-hmm.
And they sort of get a feel as they watch you as they're going, and you remember the hits and you forget the misses. We had one 25-page horoscope done in The Mass Murderer, and I gave it to 25 students telling them it was their horoscope. We had gathered their birth dates before. And most of them said, wow, I didn't believe in astrology before this, but now that I've read this, this woman knew things about me no one could have known.
And it was the same one for everybody.
Right. Yeah. Charles Starkweather, a nasty mass murderer.
And you also did one, and you talk about this in the book, where you had a woman who desperately wanted to know about a family member, and a couple of psychics came along and said that they could help and gave all sorts of nonsensical information, things that didn't lead to, I think it was the woman's mother, and I think one of the psychics' name was Ray, Kathy Ray. Or
Catherine Ray.
Catherine
right.
Ray. And you know, talk about charging people for this. There are people like this woman and Sylvia Brown and some of the others who do charge people hundreds, if not thousands of dollars to essentially con them. You don't think that's a legal problem?
It's just hard to document. Yes, it could be a fraud problem, but you think our government is competent to prosecute that when there are real crimes that... No, you're right. When they're charging thousands of dollars, if they're lying to people and it can be proven, maybe Sylvia Brown should be locked up. I don't know. I think she genuinely believes, deludes herself that she sees these things. And it's not nonsense that they tell people. It's these ambiguous tricks like, oh, I see water. The body is near water. And then they find the body somewhere, and there's always some water somewhere. It could be a stream, a pond, a faucet.
Yep, a hose.
A little, glass of water.
Let me talk about a couple of other things the government's involved in that drive me crazy, and I guess they do too with you. If we put that into English and put the words in the correct order, you'd know what I was talking about here. What do you think about these lawsuits and attempts to ban violent video games because they hurt kids?
I think it's more bloated government nonsense, because where's the evidence? This is... All these senators and congresspeople talking about how the evidence is there, but they all seem to be quoting the same guy, this David Grossman guy who gets enormous press play from idiots in my business. He's on 60 Minutes. He was on, I list them in Myths, Lies. And he claimed that the Army desensitizes soldiers to killing by having them play these video games, and they're the same games, like Doom and Quake, that the kids play.
Mm-hmm.
But the Army says it's not true. They don't use these games to desensitize soldiers. And there's just no evidence that the increased use of these games is causing increased violence, because violence is going down and there's more game use. In countries like Japan, where there's much less crime, the kids play even more of these games. They are horrible, these games. Grand Theft Auto is just repulsive, but
yep.
There's just no proof that it's leading the kids to do violent things.
And as with television and movies and radio content, it's not the government's business to be in the content business, is it?
Not unless they can show it directly hurts people.
Yeah, and Janet Jackson's breast didn't seem to really hurt people. The only ones that hurt were all the people who wasted all their time worrying about that sort of thing.
But, they have grounds to go after CBS for Janet Jackson's breast because they idiotically give CBS the airwaves. If they auctioned them off and they were owned by CBS, that would be another matter. But these are the government airwaves given as corporate welfare free to CBS and to my employer.
Mm-hmm. And being a CBS employee and you being an ABC employee, I would just say thank you.
I say thank you, but it's wrong.
What about banning smoking in bars and restaurants? I know they're in New York and some of the other states on the East Coast, they've done that. It's been attempted here in the St. Louis area. Some local municipalities have done it. It was rejected on a countywide basis in St. Louis County. What do you think of government telling a private business owner you can't allow smoking in your place?
Frankly, I love the result because I hate the smell of cigarette smoke. But as an honest principle, it's repulsive. It's the nanny state. It's a horrible intrusion into the smoker's freedom. Can't they have some bars? Most of these days are justified as public health measures. But the secondhand smoke data all came from people who lived with smokers, who were in cars and homes for year after year breathing lots of secondhand smoke. Even then, some of the EPA studies did not conclude there was any harm. I mean, you compare how much the smoker inhales, and even that does not kill half the smokers. The secondary amount is so much less, and this idea that in a bar you're going to do serious harm to yourself is so dubious, but it's been used as the justification to take away the smoker's freedom.
Yeah. To me, it's not a matter of smoker's freedom. It's a matter of the businessman's freedom to operate a business and say, look, we're going to allow smoking, and if you don't like the smoke, don't come here.
Absolutely. That's a much better way to put it.
Yeah. And I will tell you, as a person who goes to restaurants, I don't really run into this problem all that much because I don't go to smoky restaurants on purpose.
And I would even qualify it to say not the businessman, but the property owner's decision. It's his property. He wants to do anything on his property short of physically assaulting others. It should be his right.
I'll go along with that. How about medical marijuana? What are your thoughts on that?
Look, I think it should all be legal. I think it's totally hypocritical, medical or not, that I have a teenage kid. My intuitive reaction, as always with these problems, is to say there ought to be a law. You got to have regulation. You got to protect my kid from these dangerous substances. But the result is horrible. The result is hardly a dent in the number of people who use, whether it's marijuana, meth, cocaine, heroin, anything. The stuff is available. We can't even keep it out of prisons. I don't know how we think we're going to keep it out of America. I assume a certain percentage of people will abuse intoxicants. The bad part, though, is this is a really good example in that you can see the consequences of regulation because now they're so visible. There's the drug crime. The government says nicotine and heroin are equally addictive, yet no one's knocking over 7-Elevens to get Marlboros. It's the law that causes the crime. The sellers arm themselves and form gangs because they can't rely on the cops to protect their private property, and the buyers steal to pay the high prices. We're building unbelievably rich criminal gangs. We forget that Al Capone was created by alcohol prohibition. The gangs we're creating now will soon be able to buy nuclear weapons. The side effects of regulation, the unseen costs, are much worse than the seen benefits.
Plus the hypocrisy of this drug is good for you, but you can't have it, while this drug over here you can have if you just get a doctor's prescription. That drives me crazy, too.
And what drives me crazy is who is the state to say you can have? It's my body. It should be my choice to poison myself if I wish, or to sell a kidney or buy a kidney if I wish. Leave me alone, government.
Sounds like you would agree with me when I say people should be allowed to do what they want as long as it doesn't directly hurt another person.
I'm with you.
Take a ball-peen hammer to your temple all night long, bang yourself in the head until you die. Government shouldn't stop you from doing that.
Unless you're mentally ill, and then there's an argument that you should be protected from yourself, or unless you're a child.
Yeah, I would go along with that also. Politicians are a frequent target of yours, and in the book, Myths, Lies, and Downright Stupidity, you go after politicians and their laws. But I'm going to put you on the spot here, John. Can you give me an example or two of the government helping people or business in this country?
Well, sure. It helps business all the time by giving them free stuff, corporate welfare. It gave ABC the airwaves free.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's not good policy. A broader question is, can I name anything that government does as efficiently as the private sector? And the answer is no. And I'll give your listeners $100 if they can name one thing. And wasting money doesn't count, because if the private sector wanted to do that, they'd do it more efficiently than the government does.
Yeah, I was going to say corruption, but private business is pretty good at that, too.
It certainly can be. But the beauty of private business is when they're corrupt, the market finds out, and they get punished. Enron is a good example. Nobody's laughing all the way to the bank. But when government is corrupt, nothing happens. When the Bureau of Indian Affairs loses $3 billion of the Indians' money, no one is fired. No one's even reprimanded. They just go back to Congress, and we give them another $3 billion.
Well, one of the things that we see in an ongoing basis, even with the national security stories that we hear, is that people in government don't get fired. I can't name for you one person at the CIA who was fired because of the pre-9/11 and pre-Iraq War boondoggles. Can you?
No.
Not one.
And the pressures are so different. Government only grows. How big should it be? What percentage of GDP? 2%? 5%? For most of America's history, it was less than 5%. Now it's 40% and still growing. Because if you're in government, you think you need everybody, and it's painful to fire someone, and you've got the civil service rules making it almost impossible to do it, so you don't do it. So government just grows. But here at ABC, we were owned by Cap Cities, there were these horrible budget cuts, and I was furious. We can't produce 2020 without this number of producers and researchers, but we were forced to, and we found ways to do things more efficiently. Then Disney bought us, and we went through it again, and again I thought it would be impossible, but the pressure forced us to find ways to do things more cheaply. That never happens in government. Thomas Jefferson said, it's the natural progress of things for government to grow and liberty to yield. And that's what's happening.
You're exactly right. What are you working on now, John?
I'm working on the book tour for Myths, Lies, and Stupidity. That's a full-time job.
Well, it's working so far. Number 6, and I'm sure going higher. The book is called Myths, Lies, and Downright Stupidity. Get Out the Shovel, Why Everything You Know is Wrong. John Stossel from ABC's 2020. Always a pleasure.
Thank you for having me, Paul.
My pleasure. John Stossel here on the Paul Harris Show on News Talk 1120 KMOX.